Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie, low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Ken.
Very good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very good, Ken. I'm very good. Where about, what parts of the world are you in? I think the last time you and me spoke, you were in China.
I was, yeah. I'm in the lovely Manchester at the moment. Of course, we're here for the World Mixed Doubles, which starts today and finishes tomorrow. And then, of course, the Tour Championship starts on Monday, all on ITV.
I saw the mixed double competition, and I decided to look it up, and it's four different teams. I see. I'm very impressed with, we say, the ladies' side. You have Mink Nusherat, Rhianne Evans, Rebecca Kenna, and also on the men's side you have Jude Trump. So there's a array of stars on both men and women's side. Firstly, how are they paired, and how does the competition run off, Ken?
Yeah, we have the top four men in the world against I was pairing up with the top four ladies, which is great, and it's a mixed doubles event, so it should be really good. I mean, it's great for the ladies to get a chance to showcase their talent, you know, on national sort of TV with the top men, and it's a new event sort of. It started off like last year, and Neil Robertson won it with Mink. They're back again this year. Neil Robertson not in it because he's not in the top four.
Right.
As you said, good Trump. Max Selby is in it. Ronnie O'Sullivan's not playing in it, unfortunately. But top four men other than that. And, the top four ladies. So it's going to be a great event. I think it's really good that they get to play with the men and showcase their talent on national TV, as I said. So it's a great event for the ladies, and it's a good money earner for them as well. You know, it's quite a lot of money at stake as well. So very good for them as well.
Very, very good. And who are the actual pairs, or do you know them at this stage? Are they drawn yet? And who do you fancy to win it?
Well, you'd have to fancy Judd Trump. I mean, he's just come on. He's won five ranking tournaments already this season. He's been in three other finals. He's really playing superb stuff, Judd Trump. He just beat Ding in the final at Yushan last week. And, he's playing superbly well. He's paired up with Boypat, who was a ladies world champion herself a couple of years ago. So, I think he's going to probably win. But you just never know with mixed doubles.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on how the ladies play themselves. The men have to rely on the ladies to play really well. Judd Trump is going to have to rely on Boypat, but she's a very steady player herself. So I think they're probably the strongest pairing of them all, you know.
Which, and is it a case of every second shot? And forgive my innocence on the question.
They don't play every second shot. What they do is when they get to the table, they play their own shot. It's sort of not alternative strokes, but alternative plays, as it were. So once Judd Trump is at the table, he plays, and whatever break he makes, you know, then he plays away. They don't play alternative shots, right? Because that would probably take too long, you know. It wouldn't be really good for TV. They just play their own shot, basically, you know.
Right, and I see that, as you said, there's good money for it, and it's finished over the weekend. It's a round robin thing, is it?
Yeah, it's a round robin. So the top two pairings of the four teams, they qualify for the final, and they play in a best of seven in the final on Sunday. So so it should be quite good. It's quite interesting. It's sort of a novelty event, it'll be good TV. And as I said, it's great for the ladies, and also it sort of gives hope for a lot of the other ladies who play on the ladies tour, you know.
Yeah.
To say, well, if I do quite well, I get into the top four, I could play in that big money event towards the end of next season as well. So I think it's quite interesting for them, you know.
Very good. And I see then next week the Tour Championship starts, and like everything else, I looked up to see the prize money on this, and it's quite okay. Staggering, 150,000, and they say in London in real money, sterling. That's some package for a winning. I suppose everybody is playing on that, Ken.
Yeah, well, it's the top 12 players in the world.
Okay.
So you'll have all the big hitters, and it's a sort of it's a series of what's happened with ITV. We had sort of the Grand Prix, which was the top 32. Then we had the Players' Championship, which is top 16. And now it's down to the top 12, which is the Tour Championship. It's the last one before the World Championship, so big money at stake. And also, you know, the other sort of side battle that's going on between Ronnie O'Sullivan and Judd Trump, who have been the outstanding players of this season, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
That they're vying for the world number one spot as well. So there's only 38,000, I think, prize money between the two of them.
Yeah.
So whoever goes on, you know, to play well in this event could be going in as number one into the World Championship, which starts in Sheffield the middle of April. So, yeah, the sort of side tussles going on.
As well as
the big tournament going on as well.
And having been a winner of the world title yourself, I mean, if you are the number one, do you get better seeding draws and stuff like that if you are?
Well, not really. I mean, you're seeded as number one, obviously, you know, but I think it's just the sort of stature of it, you know, to finish the season as world number one, and if you can be world champion at the same time, well, you know, it's just the icing on the cake, I suppose. So there is a great race on. It's quite interesting, you know. Well, it's $500,000, of course, for the winner of the World Championship.
Yeah.
Now, Ronnie O'Sullivan and Judd Trump have already accumulated over £1 million, both respectively, this season, which is unprecedented, you know, for two players to do it in one season. So $500,000 for the winner of the World Championship is quite substantial. So,
Very interesting. Who do you fancy? You know, I mean, obviously Joe Trump and a few of these, but who do you actually fancy to lift the trophy, or who do you fancy to get to?
I think it'll probably be between Trump and O'Sullivan. Although, you know, you'll have someone like Mark Allen, who's had a really good season this year as well. He's been, you know, a winner of three events. He'd be quite dangerous. Ding Junhui, who hasn't won anything this year, but he's been in a couple of finals. He lost in the final to Judd Trump last week, and he's been in another. He's done really very consistently well this season. And of course, you've got Max Selby as well. He's always very, very consistent and very, very tough to beat. But I think Trump and O'Sullivan have been outstanding this year. You know, really, really played some great snooker and very, very tough to beat. And I'm sure they're going to be thereabouts at this tournament and the World Championship as well next month.
Yeah, and you say if the first time ever two players winning €1 million in the one season, obviously there's a little bit more money in it when you were playing yourself. That's substantial. I mean, we're nearly talking about golf terms at this stage. You know, obviously for the top three or four players in it, it's quite a tidy sum to earn in the one year.
Yeah, I mean, when Stephen Hendry back in the 90s, I think he won eight events in a row.
Eight
events in one season and still didn't reach the million mark, you know. Yeah. So that will tell you, I mean, probably when he was winning the World Championship, about 200,000, 150,000, you know, now it's $500,000. So it's like 20, I think there's 20 ranking tournaments or something like that this season, where back in those days there might have been 10. So a big, big difference. And, you know, the tour has got a lot more wider, you know, played a lot more tournaments in China, you know, they played in Saudi Arabia, of course, this year as well. There's going to be a big ranking tournament in Saudi Arabia at the end of August, beginning of September. So it's a lot more money in the tour, which is great for the players, great for the tour, and great for all the professionals as well, right down the ladder. You
know? Absolutely. And is there any part of Ken Doherty that wished he was about 15 or 20 years younger?
Without a shadow of a doubt, I'm looking forward to the senior tournament.
speaking of such, you won a very, very good tournament yourself in Ireland not so long ago.
Yeah, down in Goffs, it was great. We had a seniors down there on Channel 5, which is the first time Channel 5 had sort of televised an event which was great, you know, particularly in Ireland. And beat Jimmy White in the final was quite nice, Sean, you know, because as a 14-year-old, I used to be an usher down there, and I used to have one of the jobs was cleaning out the dressing rooms. I used to clean out Jimmy White's dressing room back in the day, you know, in the early 80s, and to play him in the final and beat him.
Very nice, quite poignant, and poor old Jimmy. And don't mind saying this, I just love watching him playing the left-handed. But didn't he lose 6 world finals, if I'm not mistaken?
He lost six world finals. That's 4 in a row to Stephen Hendrick, would you believe? Oh. You know, so
I take it they're not best friends.
We've only a few minutes left, Ken, but
I know I was listening to you last week with Reggie talking about Manchester United and Liverpool, but I honestly can't go there because of that. But I do want to get your view on the real big game that's there, and I'll be asking Alan Colley later in the show. City and the Arsenal game. Huge game for Arsenal in the sense if they don't put up a thing, this time last year they seem to fall away. So hopefully they'll put up a performance. Who do you see winning that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a cracking game. You know, actually, I think Arsenal are in a really good place. You know, I think they're playing great football. You know, Arteta has them really well organised. Good team. Even though they don't have a really sort of recognised centre-forward, you know, the one that you would say is a, you know, like that, like a Haaland that's going to deliver lots of goals. But I think they work really well as a team. And they're great. They're easy on the eye to watch.
Okay.
You probably think City are probably the better team of the two, but I think it's going to be. This season at the Premiership, it's such a great season with the three teams all at the top, and it's very, very, very close between them all. But I think City may edge it.
We now have our community section.
Dublin Sporting Communities, funded by Comisshoon the Man, with the television licence fee on Sunshine 106.8.
Good afternoon or good morning again. In studio I have with me here Dave Hicks. He's head coach of the Eagles at the De La Salle Palmerstown Rugby Club. Good morning to you, Dave.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Dave, I know absolutely nothing about your club. You might just tell me about De La Salle in as a club first, when it was founded and how many teams, etc. that you do have, please.
Right, no problem. Palmerstown was down in Milltown, and they were set up around 1899. And then the Palmerston and De La Salle merged together, and they have a premises now up in Kiltiernan, just in the foothills of the Dublin Mountains. So we have, in the mini youth section, we'd have nearly 500 players, and on the seniors, we'd have 4 senior team, and we'd also have ladies team, and we have a lot of girls. In the mini youth section, we'd have quite a few girls. And then on the special needs area, then we have the junior Eagles, which would be sort of from about 6 or 7 up to 18. And then we'd have the senior Eagles, 18 up to, you know, our oldest player last year was 65.
Right, okay. So there's still hope for me, is there?
There's still hope, yeah.
And I suppose, Dave, where do you get all your membership from? It's a community project, so, you know, could they come through a school, or are they just children of parents and stuff like that?
We would get mostly from the local area, because in Kiltiernan, we're just on the main road up to Enniskerry, so there's thousands of people going by every day. So the club is there. And we'd get a lot of people then from the local area. But then you'd have, you know, loyalties to DLSP.
Yeah.
So, you know, past players coming and bringing their own kids back. And you'd have quite a bit of that. But generally speaking, on the special needs area, then people could be coming from anywhere.
Right.
Because they want to play with the club. They want to play rugby with tag rugby.
Of course.
And that's so they could be coming from anywhere. You know?
I'll just get on to the special needs one in a second. But just your top teams in both men and ladies in on the rugby side, what levels do they play at?
Well, we're not in AIL at the moment, unfortunately. But we're hoping to get there now. The lads who are playing on the first team, a lot of them have come through the club from Daisy Pickers all the way through the various different age groups up to where they are, and we are getting better all the time, and the club is fantastic. Like, there's fantastic facilities. There's 3 pitches up there, so, you know, and with all the people that are coming into the area, like, there's huge growth.
the clubs will improve, and we will improve our numbers, and that'll improve our players and bring a bit of competition into the teams.
Excellent. And I suppose you've touched on the Eagles. You're head coach of the Eagles. I like this project. One of my neighbours, young David Humphreys, plays up there, and he absolutely loves it, and a lovely little young man he is. But you might just tell us the whole project of the Eagles. And you mentioned that there's a kind of a junior Eagles as well. Yeah. You might take us through the whole thing and what you do in the community for
right.
For
we started off with the Eagles about 14-15 years ago, and that was purely fluke, that a guy came into the bar one day from Sea Point Rugby Club, and he said, oh, we're thinking of setting up a special needs rugby team in Sea Point. Would De La Salle be interested? And he also got the lads in Greystones interested. So the three of us came together and we set up a special needs team. I got in touch with Cheeverstown. A friend of mine worked in Cheeverstown. He got me some players, and we started. Now we have about 25 to 30 players on a regular basis.
And the age profile of them, how young are they? And I know we'll go through the young section in a second, but we'll say the players playing on the adult one.
The players on the adult team would be from about 15, 16 up to any age.
Right.
Like last year, Joe Byrne unfortunately died. He was 65.
Right, okay.
And he had Down syndrome. But a lovely man, loved rugby, but could hardly walk. So he was the captain,
right?
And he used to have to shout at everybody to pass the ball and do the rest of it. So he loved it.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of being able to play. It's being able to be involved.
Right.
It's all about, you know, building their social capital. They come up and they play with us. Then we go and play other teams. Now there are about, I think in Leinster alone, there are about 25 teams.
Right. Okay.
So we go to festivals all over the place.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the seriousness of the game, is it tag rugby or is it real rugby?
No, it's tag rugby. For the Eagles, it's tag rugby, so it's non-contact tag rugby. And we work with the players that we have, whatever their ability or disability is, we will work with them so that they can play. We also have a team called the Vikings, which is a mixed ability team.
Okay.
So in the mixed ability team, you have special needs players playing with able-bodied players.
Okay.
And we play the team, the players that would be considered special needs players, we call them star players. But they play full contact and on full pitches, and they'd be uncontested scrums, but it's good fun.
Yeah.
And the emphasis is on having fun, but nobody is going to go out and hurt a player on the pitch. It's, you know, like if you have a star player, you would train them into being able to play the game within their own abilities, if you like.
Yes.
So nobody is going to, you know, tackle him very hard or anything like that. If there's a star player has the ball, he's trained to put the ball on the ground and set it back so that he doesn't have to get into a scrummage or into a ruck.
I'm with you. Yeah.
So it's great fun.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
Some of the best rugby we've ever played, and matches and enjoyment has come.
I suppose it's like 25 tries to 23 and scores.
Well,
like
in the Vikings, in the mixed ability, you can have winners and losers.
Okay.
In the Eagles, which is the tag rugby, we've never lost a game, and we're going 14 years now, never lost a game. But then we've never won a game either.
And just when I hear all that, and I do a bit of coaching myself, or used to do a bit of coaching, that it can't be easy to bring all of them together and you know, make allowances for you know where they are and coach them kind of individually or as a group, or how do you go about doing that?
Well, like, I'd have very great support. Like, you know, I've Ursula, I've Wendy, I've Connor, I've Simon. They all coach with us, and they help to, you know, if one player has a particular need or particular difficulty, we might bring him to the side and get them involved. But generally speaking, it's not a big problem. You know, the parents are usually on the sideline. If there's any difficulties, it's, you know, the parents could step in. But generally speaking, they're all players. They come up to the rugby club, they're treated as players, they're treated as club members, they get on with the game. And at the end of a game, like if we're playing against Sea Point, the guys from Sea Point, the coaches in Sea Point don't care whether it's a win or a draw.
Which, yeah.
And if some of our players or some of their players have to get a try after the match is over, that's not a problem either, right. You know, that can be yeah. done, you know. So it's very straightforward. Once the players are enjoying themselves, it doesn't really matter yeah. what happens after that.
And after games and that social activity and stuff like that, I mean, obviously there's obviously events for them to enjoy themselves. And do they do it with other teams together, or are they just in
yeah,
their
well,
own group?
Well, if we have a festival, like Balbriggan's festival now is on tomorrow week, there'll probably be about 10 or 12 clubs up there. And each club will come up with maybe 20 players.
Yeah.
So it's a big number. And after the meal, or sorry, after the games, there'll be a barbecue and there'll be a bit of social activity and having a chat and a bit of a laugh. Like one of our girls, Rachel, fancies one of the lads who plays with... oh, God, I'm after forgetting the name of the place.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Westminstown.
Right, okay.
And if she gets the ball, she gives the ball to Aaron. Aaron will get her try and then come back and give her a hug.
Right, okay. I think you're going to get a lot of people to sign up after this morning's interview.
I hope
yeah.
so.
That's very good. And tell us, how long are you with them yourself?
I'm up in the rugby club now since my son Barry was an under eight. And so I'm coaching you there over nearly 35 years.
And obviously you played a bit yourself, I'd say.
I played a bit in school, yeah. No,
right.
I wanted to play for Ireland, but it wasn't good enough.
we all have that dream, yeah.
But so I now start off Sunday morning now. I coach the Daisy Pickers, would be my first team.
Right, and what age group are they again, sorry?
They're under fives.
Okay.
So some of them are literally in nappies.
Right.
Running around, and so that's under fives. And then I have the Junior Eagles, which starts at 10 o'clock.
Yes.
And they go on for an hour. And then at 11 o'clock, then I'd have the Senior Eagles.
So you're out basically all Saturday morning with
Sunday mornings. Yeah. And then the mixed ability team, they train on a Monday night at 7:30. Now, why I'm involved... I'm not the coach. Ken is the coach.
Yeah.
But I pretend I'm a player.
Right. Okay. And just across those three particular teams, I mean, how many actual coaches? You've mentioned yourself and you've mentioned Ken. How many other people actually the tracksuit and are out the field?
We have five coaches now for the Eagles and for the Junior Eagles. Ryan coaches with me on the Junior Eagles, and Finn, who is actually... an Eagles player, special needs player, star player, he helps me coach with the Junior Eagles.
Very, very good, yeah. I have to say, it's a tremendous story. Anybody listening to it would want to get involved. I mean, how would you contact the Eagles and De La Salle?
If they want to come up to the club some Sunday morning and look for me, they'd be very welcome to come up and have a look and see what's involved. If they want to,
and what times would that be, Dave?
Well, if they come up, the Junior Eagles start at 10 o'clock and the Senior Eagles start at 11 o'clock. And if they look up DLSP Eagles... on the website, they get my telephone number and our contact details. And we want girls as well as boys playing. It's very important.
Excellent. Well, I've got to say, it's probably one of the best interviews I've done on the community section. Thank you very much for coming into us, and really the best of luck with all your endeavours up there. Fantastic story.
Lovely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very, very good. What part of the world are you in, Dan?
No, I'm in Ireland.
Good.
Recovering from last night's Bulls loss to Leinster.
Oh, we'll get on to that in a minute. I suppose, Dan, I'd like to start with the ladies' football. An international weekend for the ladies. Ireland play Italy. Both teams beaten, I'd say Italy beaten comprehensively 48-0 by England the last day. Ireland probably beaten well by France, it would have to be saw the first day. Are we going in the right direction, do you think? I just wanted and I know it's an early question to ask you, based on last year what you saw and compared to what you saw the first day, are we going in the right direction, do you think?
Look, I definitely think there's more excitement about this campaign, you know, and having lost the five games last year, and then obviously in the World Cup qualifier, or not the World Cup qualifiers, the new competition that's there. They
yes.
played against weaker opposition, but had some success, and that sometimes helps a team to build confidence and in each other and in the new coach and so on. So I think from what I've seen last week, you know, there's definitely an improvement in physicality and defence, although it was a previous occasion. So I think that was against France. I think there was a lot of good aspects about it that we probably didn't see on previous occasions. So I think that would have given them confidence early doors. There is a bit of pressure, I would say, on them. The draw is definitely favouring Ireland this year to probably end third. It's going to be difficult to beat England as well. So
yes.
I would say France and England as always the favourites. But Ireland, I think, will be disappointed if they can't get that third position. And playing Italy at home tomorrow, playing Scotland at home, playing Wales at home, I think they've got a real opportunity. So I think your question that you're asking is probably... we'll know more after the Italy game. You know, the home team have always measured, you know, in the last few years, or I think since 2018, the home team have always won it. So, you know, that puts pressure on itself, on Ireland, to go out and beat Italy on this occasion. So I'm very interested to see how they go. I did see improvement.
Good, yeah.
So I think the Italy game is going to be the main one now.
Yeah, and I suppose just on the Italy game, I watched the French game and I thought we kicked the ball an awful lot. Do you think that Scott Beaman may allow them, you know, have more ball to hand and carry?
So I don't know too much about... I would hope so. I would hope so, you know. And I think, again, that is coaching philosophy. So I don't know too much about Scott, who's the head coach, and Declan Danner has obviously had a good Premiership record and so on with London Irish, and being a good player as defence coach. So a lot of time when you come into a team that you don't know too well, or that you try to get confidence in, you make sure that they fit, and you know you play a good territory game and hope to defend it. So, but I would like to see more of Ireland. I think, you know, with Eve Higgins and Bevan Parsons, that's coming from the Seventh Circuit, that probably also wasn't allowed at your best players out there as coaches. I think it's a good thing that the Sevens girls are allowed to play 15s as well, because you want your best players out there. But I would like to see how Ireland can attack, you know, and against Italy, expect them to play more of an attacking game while upholding their defence.
And before we just flip across to the Leinster game last night, call the winner of the game, Ireland or Italy, home advantage probably might sway it for Ireland, will it?
Well, I would say so, you know. And being Irish, you know, it has to be Irish win, you know. We've got good aspirations of qualifying for the next World Cup without playing preliminary games.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the game you really love analysing for me, last night's game, I'm 12 up. I thought Leinster, it was a game of two halves. There's no doubt that the Bulls threw everything at the start and went in at half-time 14-12 up. I thought Leinster and Leo Cullen would be absolutely delighted. I thought Larimer was brilliant. I thought tries from Van der Fleer, Lowe, Turner, Conan, I could go on. It just seemed like a totally different opposition and a totally different Leinster team the second half.
Oh, look, I'll agree with you. You know, I think it's like in any game, there's a few things that you know, you look back on and what made the one team get their game going and what made the other team be so strong, you know. So I thought the Bulls really defended well in the first half and Leinster couldn't get their game going. And that's probably because of the pressure they were under in scrum, you know, in set piece and so on. So I think the Luke McGrath incident was a massive one in the game.
Yes.
You know, in other games that might have been a red card, you know. It was a yellow card, but if it's a yellow card, then it should have been a penalty try, which is an extra 2 points, and then suddenly you're 16-12 behind. But I think Jacques Nienaber is playing a massive... And this is the strange thing for me, or the funny thing for me is, you know, I think Jacques Nienaber is playing a massive role within Leinster as well, not just on the defence that was very good last night again, but in the selection of the team and so on as well. You know, a lot of people spoke about South Africa, the 6-2 split and so on during the World Cup, and is it allowed, is it not allowed? And you could see that for me is where the game changed last night when I got a few laughs around me when I said, here's the bomb squad coming. First scrum down, Mona, Jason Jenkins, Sheehan, Caelan Doris, you know, all coming in at once. And then first scrum down, Leinster got the penalty from the scrum. And from there, you know, it was just dominance, you know. So that aspect of being a strong bench and bringing fresh guys on of that quality. But then I also thought that the Bulls straight after halftime managed the game very poorly. Still 2 points up.
Yeah.
Didn't clear their lines. Leinster got a penalty, kicked it to the corner, scored, and off the restart.
Tries that Leinster got. I mean, they were...
From 14-12, it's 26-14, and you're fighting a losing battle, you know.
Yeah, what surprised me was some of the tries that Leinster got. I mean, they were defending, you know, inside their own 25, and next thing they broke with the ball, and they went the full length of the field, which surprised me no end.
The offloading skills, the passing accuracy, the pace on the ball, you know, I was lucky enough to be... lucky or unlucky enough to meet some of the Bulls coaches afterwards, and they just said when Leinster have the ball, the pace that they come onto the ball and the support play, you know, they're going to defend against Leinster. They support in behind the players. They just actually, once there's a line break, it's very difficult to defend against Leinster. So you have to stop them on the gain line. And I thought what Leinster did really well is they won the aerial battle in the second half. I thought their kicking game was quite good. And then the way they attacked the blind side, I think three of the tries came on the blind side, you know, where the Bulls probably overfolded to the open side and good spots by Leinster to attack down the blind.
Yeah. Now, probably not a really good story at the moment. And up there, and again on rugby, parting ways with John Petrie, the CEO. A couple of problems up there, and again on the field. I mean, is there correlation between what happens in the boardroom and what's happening on the field? I mean, they're away to the Stormers, and again, you're probably shouting for them, but also lost to the Sharks last weekend. So it's not going easy for Ulster at the moment.
No, look, and I think those things always reflect, you know, you can go into any organisation, you know, and if it is ultimately about the players have to perform. But there's a lot of outside things that can have those factors, and we as public don't always know about it, and that's come to the fore now in Ulster. You know, a few of the problems that probably put pressure on Dan McFarland as well, and could he do things that he wanted to do? Who knows? I think Richie Murphy is a fantastic coach, and his record shows that. Probably not the easiest start to go to South Africa and play against the Sharks team that has a lot of Springboks in it, and then, you know, the Stormers, they haven't lost at home in 7 games.
And I see, you know, they're fifth in the URC as well, so they're fairly high up there.
Yeah, they didn't start well, you know, but if you look at their team, Frans Malherbe, the tight end, is on the bench today, he's coming back, you know, but the back line of Galant, Hartzenberg, Willems, Lubbock, you know, the vet, the scrum half, he's playing very good rugby at the moment, and they've also got a pack that can live with physicality. So I think, for me, although it's early doors, but I think Stormers, and then we'll probably talk about Munster as well. Stormers and Munster are building nicely at the moment again, you know, and they were obviously the two finalists last year. So I think I see Richie has made a few changes, and again, there's some exciting backs, but early in the season, Reggie and myself had a chat, and we said, you know, Ulster's problem is their fly-off. You can't win competitions if you don't have a fly-off, and I see now they try Neil Dope on fly-off, who's really a scrum-off, so I think that's still a big area of concern for Ulster at the moment, is going away from home and trying to win games when you don't really have a specialist in that position.
And speaking of Munster, they're at home, they're playing Cardiff, who are 12th in the league, and Graham Rowntree, as you said, and I was going to make the point that they're definitely improving, and I would certainly see a Munster win today. I think they're 7 o'clock this evening.
Yes, look, they've had 3 bonus point wins on the trot, but the interesting thing is they've lost their last 3 games in Thomond Park.
Yes.
which you probably don't associate with Munster. But then again, Cardiff would not have a good record. You know, I think they've lost 10 in 10 visits. They've only won one or lost all of them. So they lost their last 4 games. But again, you know, The Welsh in the Six Nations relied a lot on Cardiff players. You know, Mason Grady can get them go forward, and they still have finishers like Josh Adams and the young Winnett. So De Beer is a South African fly-off that play very much a territory game. So they'll try and put Munster under pressure. But the Munster team from, you know, it's starting to look really good. And where I judge that on is if you have guys like Ahern, Kendall and Carberry and Zeebo on the bench,
yes,
then you know the starting lineup is good, you know, and you can bring those guys on. And they'll certainly add a lot of value. So I think you're going to go far to get a second row partnership like Snyman and Byrne,
yeah,
you know, and they're complementing each other really well, two extra carriers. So no, I think Munster, you know, fairness to Roundtree, is getting them to play some good rugby, but they can also play a physical game if it needs to be, and they can play expansive game when they want.
And I see there's talk of Joey Carberry going to Bordeaux. That confirmed, I don't know whether it is or not. But if it is it a good thing for him, Dan?
Look, I would know Joey, you know, and I would say he went through a very tough time, you know, through injury, through probably miscommunication or whatever, and probably lost a little bit of confidence in himself and in the game. He's come back really strong this year. I think the games that he's played for Munster, he's really played well. Crowley has obviously stepped past him. He's a lot more mature. You know, he's 28 or 29. So I think for him personally, it's probably the right move. I think for Munster, it's a bad move, you know, because, again, you need that depth if you want to go deep into Championship and, you know, URC. So I heard that they signed Billy Burns, you know, but Billy, you know, he was in Ulster. Did he help them? I'm not too sure. So I think Joey's going to be a big loss for Munster, you know, just because he's also such a versatile player, very good goal kicker, very calm and collective. So sad to see him go, but personally for him, I think it's the right choice.
Right, I'm with you, yeah. And I suppose I can't let you go without talking about Peter Wilkins, Connacht. They're playing Benetton. Both teams, I looked at the table last night, are on 33 points. Loser definitely, I'd say, gone out of the competition, but winner has a chance of making top eight, has he?
Yes, and look, the URC this year is so much more competitive, you know. Stormers in fifth and the Ospreys in 11th, and there's only 5 points separating them. So I think that's good for any competition. And Connacht, you know, Connacht is just outside of that. So I think it was the worst performance that we've seen from a Connacht team in probably 3 years last week. The Lions wouldn't be known as the best South African team, although they've also found a style that suits them. But I think Connacht needs to bounce back and bounce back convincingly. You know, the advantage that they have is that they play Benetton and they've got a very good record against Benetton, winning 9 out of 10 games.
Yes.
But then Brex, the Italian centre, who was very good in the Six Nations, Bamaru, the captain, they all in the Benetton team, and they would have taken confidence from the Six Nations as well. So not an easy task for Connacht, but you'd like some of those players. So Halloran has been there a long time. You know, Carty has been there a long time. You need those guys to bring the real values back of Connacht and say, guys, this is not good enough. We have to step up and we have to be in that top eight contention.
We're into our GAA section here. Firstly, a couple of housekeeping issues. Friends of Dublin Hurling have been on to me about their golf classic on the 16th of May in Castlewarden, an event I've played on many, many a time and always a great day out. Cost of a team is €400, includes a nice meal. If you want to play, please contact Eugene Davey, 087-699-5593. That's Eugene Davey, 087-699-5593. On the field of play, football first, the Dublin minor footballers had an excellent win over Leash midweek, and also the under-20s had a fantastic win over Westmeath. So well done to both of them. in the Camon, as we call it here. The under 21 hurlers are out. Shane O'Brien are out this afternoon playing Offaly in Parnell Park, 2 o'clock. All support greatly appreciated, and a call out there for my own club man Dylan Ballon, who's included in the playing squad. So let's hope that he gets a run and we have a very successful day for Dublin hurling. Also, divided loyalties. My daughter will be going elsewhere today. She'll be going up to watch the ladies Camogie team. They're 3 wins out of 3. They play Antrim in O'Toole Park at 2 o'clock. If they win, they reach the league final and chance to get back promoted to Division 1A. So, to the weekend, though, unfortunately or fortunately, belongs to football. And I hope I have Brian Talty on the line with me there. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very, very good, Brian. And yourself?
Good, yeah.
Brian, a mouth-watering weekend for football. If you don't mind, I'll start at the end of the first game. Andy Morden doing an absolutely smashing job with Leitrim, playing Justin McNulty's Laois, who I just look back through the records. Laois back in 1986, managed by Kieran Brennan from Ballinteer St John's. Laois have fallen a long way since then, but certainly should be a really good game. They met in the league, and I see Leitrim won by a point, 17 points to 113. How would you see this one going this evening?
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, two great managers there and two great footballers when they actually played, Sean, you know. So yeah. Justin McNulty was very successful with Laois a few years ago, and they're thrilled to have him back there. And you can see what's happening. There's great confidence in the players, and they've got through now, and they're promoted, and they're on to try and win a National League Cup today. So, there's always a lot of really good footballers in Laois, and they just needed to be managed very well. And yeah. I'm sure Justin is doing that. Like so, and the same with Andy. Andy's a very experienced player, he made a smart move. He brought in Mickey Graham from Cavan to help him. And according to Andy, he's making a big difference up there as well. But look, to be honest with you, it's a huge day for these two counties, particularly for Leitrim. Sean, Leitrim have only played in Croke Park on 5 occasions.
You're joking.
In their history.
I know they played Dublin in All Ireland final, semi final, 1992 or 1994, was it?
Well, your memory is probably better than mine.
I think it was 1992.
It was indeed, and you know that team was captained by Declan Darcy.
That's correct.
Made a huge impact on Dublin football in years after that. But it's a huge day for Leitrim. Laois would be used to playing in Croke Park, but Leitrim, it's a fantastic day for them. And people who say, you know, there shouldn't be a league final and all this kind of thing.
Oh, that's wrong.
They don't realise what it means to a county like Leitrim to get into Croke Park, as I say. I think it's their 6th time in their history. Like, so that's just amazing. And the county are getting right behind them. So it's a brilliant day for them. Who's going to win it? Well, yeah. You know, it's very, very close. And I think that Laois might just have a little bit more up front than Leitrim. Leitrim seem to depend on Ryan O'Rourke at centre forward and Dara Rooney at full forward. Now, Dara Rooney, we've seen him play in Dublin club football for St Jude's. He's a really brilliant footballer, but they seem to depend on these two, whereas there's a bigger spread of scorers in Laois, and that might be the difference. And maybe the experience of playing in Croke Park as well might be a plus for Laois. So yeah. I think it'll be a tight one. My heart says Leitrim, because I've been a Connacht man. I'd love to see Leitrim win that title, but I think Laois might just pip it, but I'm hoping for Leitrim as well.
I'll give you a right rub now, Talty. It is about the only Connacht team that you've shouted for all year other than Galway. I have to say I'd be with you on that. My mother, as you know, is North Roscommon, and Carrick and Shannon was the nearest town to French Park, so I'd be behind Leitrim myself. But because it's such a big thing for them to go up the Hogan Stand and collect a cup in Croke Park, it'd be a fantastic occasion for them.
Sean, just the thing, like, the people who are saying not to play finals, like, they're looking at leagues over the water, and the league is won by the team that are top of the league and everything like that. This is the way we do it.
Yeah.
And I can't say what, you can't get away from the way we do it, because people love to get to Croke Park. They love to play in Croke Park. When are Leitrim and even Laois going to get the chance to play in the national final in Croke Park again? It's a wonderful occasion for the two counties, and particularly for Leitrim.
I agree with that. We'll move on to the Division 3 final, but just to add to your point, a lot of those leagues that you're talking about, they have 34 and 35 games and 36 games. Our national leagues have in Hurling 5 and 7 in Ting. I'm 100% with you that we should definitely have finals. The Division 3 final, Conor Lafferty's Down versus Desi Dolan's Westmead. Two reasonably decent footballers in their own time as well. But I suppose different stories. Down probably favourites last year to win the Todgerton Cup, but Mead definitely deserved it on the day and finished the better side. The year prior to that, Westmead probably weren't favourites going in against Cavan and actually won the Todgerton Cup. How would you see that game going? And both teams have listened and read their reports that they're both happy to be promoted. But again, the point you made about the Division 4, there'll be one of these or both of these teams will want to go up the Hogan Stand steps and collect a cup as well.
Sean, you know, when any competition you play in and there's a cup at the end of it, and particularly a national final like that, and particularly in Croke Park, like the teams, there's no way they're going to go out and not go for this, even though, you know, there's complaints about the championship coming up soon again in a week or 2 weeks or whatever. But once you get a chance of a national final in Croke Park, these teams will really go at it. And I watched Down last week, and they played against Clare, who had been going really well in Division 3 as well. And it was a game where they had to win it. Half-time, it was kind of 1-7 to 1-4. Mm. But Down came out in the second half and played just massive football. If you put the Derry jerseys on them, yeah, you'd say it was Derry that were playing, because, you know, their pace all over the place. They have some great forwards. They play a little bit like Laverty's club of Kilcoo, where they transition very quickly from their defence to the forwards. And they have the Kilcoo man, Ryan Johnson. He kind of plays as a playmaker for them. But the pace of the forwards, they have Liam Kerr at centre forward, Danny McGill, Pat Hayford at full forward, really play great football. And got some massive scores. And they worked so hard all over the field. They really wanted that game, and you can be sure that when Down come to Croke Park, they always do well in Croke Park. Yeah. So they're in there with a great chance. You know, they're defenders as well. What's the amazing thing in football at the moment, Sean, is that defenders are getting lots of scores. Their number four, Caelan Doherty, scores something like 1-2 the last day. So that's way they play. They come back. Yeah, absolutely. For a cornerback in the old days, you'd be shot for going up there, Sean.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't be able to get back, Brian.
No, that's talk for yourself now. But anyway, yeah, look, and Conor Laverty, again, like when we talk about adding a bit of experience, has brought in Kieran Myrna, who was the manager of Derry last year. So he's adding to them as well this year. So yeah, it should be an interesting one. And just to add a Dublin flavour to it, Westmead have Jason Sherlock in there as their forward coach.
That's right.
So and you know what? He has a lot of forwards to work with as well. Like, you know, so and they have John Heslin coming back as well into the game. Hasn't played it all through the league, so he's back in here again today. So he make a big difference. But I just get a feeling there's a sparkle about Down.
Yeah.
They're playing great football. Their work rate is amazing. And Westmead, the last day, you know, if you listen to Desi during the week, they didn't play well against Sligo. Sligo beat them well.
That's right.
But having said that, when you come into Croke Park, they're used to being in Croke Park, and as you say, they won the Talton Cup there not too long ago. Had a very good championship last year. Remember, it was just one free from John Heston, just happened to miss a free.
That's correct.
It would have put them into the next round of the championship. So I think this is going to be the best game of the weekend, to be honest.
And it sounds like that Croke Park might just suit the way Down play.
It really will. If they play like they played last week, with, you know, the pace and the power, and they run forward and at pace, so it should suit them. But Westmead will be hard to beat. They're a big, strong, physical team with some good forwards as well. So I think I go for Down, Sean, because of, you know, that sparkle that they had the last day, and I think they want to win this. And you know, it'll be good to see Down again up in the Hogan Stand if they get there.
Absolutely. Now we have two games then on Sunday, and you can argue or disagree with me on this. We've Armagh versus Donegal, and we have Dublin versus Derry, and you could conceivably argue that those four teams will probably be all reach the quarterfinal of the All Ireland series.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you there at all. Like, I mean, Donegal and Armagh really should be Division 1 teams.
Yeah.
It's not too long ago since Armagh were in an All-Ireland semi-final and were only beaten on penalties.
That's correct.
The amount of talent that they have is just unbelievable. I just think they overemphasise the kind of defensive stuff.
Yeah.
And they don't give their forwards enough of a chance, because they have, like, I mean, the forward line that they have is just unbelievable. You look at, you know, they have Mernan up there, they've Grugan up there. Yes, Soupy Campbell, as they call him, Reno O'Neill to come into that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're massive forwards. Like, so if they were given a chance, and they might be given the chance in Croke Park, you know, they could get a lot of scores for Armagh. But should be an interesting one.
Yeah, I was looking at it, and we'll talk about Donegal in a second, but I kind of said to myself, okay, two unbeaten teams in the same league, they drew when they played one another, two excellent managers. But the one thing, I have a wide range on this question, that this could end up 3 points apiece, or it could end up 317 apiece, depending on what way both managers decide to play this game.
Absolutely, and that's, we're sitting here and we're talking about, and we're hoping that it's going to be the 317 to 316 game.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, what have they to lose to go out and Croke Park today? Now, the two managers, they think very deeply about the game. And I get worried when they think really deeply about the game, because it seems to be on the defensive side of the thing.
Yes.
Whereas we'd love to see them in Croke Park with the forwards that they have, like, to have a go at it. But look, they're probably looking at, this is the way we play and this is the process and all this kind of thing. But we as supporters will be hoping that they're going to let them go and have a good shot at it and have a great game. But I have my doubts about that one, to be honest with you.
And tell us, from a Donegal point of view, I mean, I'd agree all your sentiments in relation to Armagh, that I think they've 25 top-class footballers there and good underage structure. But from a Donegal perspective, Jim McGuinness is back in. He's obviously got the interest levels through the roof. You could see their very first National League game against Cork. They bet them out the gate, and we've seen Cork Division 2 have come back at the end of the season and drawn with Armagh. So from a Donegal point of view, what will Jim bring to, do you think, to the table tomorrow?
Well, we talked about Jim for a good bit there earlier on in the year, and we just saying, like, he brings that organisation. But I was just reading there during the week, one of his ex-players, he just gives them a confidence. And it's not, you're saying, he's not like the new type of psychologist or anything like that. It's just the way he goes on. He's well organized. His training sessions would be outstanding. He doesn't take any messing from anybody. And everything's kept in-house. And he gives them that confidence. And look, as I said before, he was begging for the job years ago. And they didn't give it to him, and now the county board want him. So, and he's doing a massive job. But now he's it's unfortunate for him that, you know, Ryan McHugh got injured the last day, Paddy McBrearty got injured the last day. Two very good forwards and two leaders of
and
of
two
the team.
Experienced players.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely, and experienced of playing in Croke Park as well. So that's the unfortunate thing for him, and that's why I kind of look at Armagh and say, look, I think Armagh will take this if they really go for it. And you're hoping that both teams will go for it and we get an outstanding
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely.
And we'll wait and see, as the fellow says.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, there is nothing wrong if both managers approach this for 30, 35 minutes and said, well, you know, I'm not going to give away a goal. I'm going to close down space. I'm not going to foul them. And then, you know, once we get past half time, we'll open the floodgates and have a cut at it. And if both managers adopted that approach, I'd settle for that, because we would definitely get some sort of a good game.
Yeah, we go away from the game if the second half goes like that.
Yeah,
we go away, you know, with a joy in our hearts, because we've seen a great game of football in Croke Park, and that's what we're hoping is going to happen. It will be tactical and it will be defensive, as you say, early on, and then hopefully the forwards will be let go and have a go at it.
Absolutely.
Who do I think will win it?
Yes, that's my last question on that before we move on to Dublin Derry.
I'm reading your mind there. Look, I think Armagh are a little bit further down the line in their development, and I think, you know, I have friends up in Armagh that could be listening this morning, so I have to go for Armagh. But I'm hoping, as you say, it's going to be a great game of football.
When
you look at the talent that's on view, if the managers let them go at it,
And you know, we'll cover the other game in a sec, but you know, the managers, I think, will learn an awful lot more if they let teams go at it, because they'll see the holes that they leave in the back, but they'll also realise the talent they have going forward. And I just think you'll learn more than that than putting the bus in front of goal and deciding, well, we'll only concede 5 points today and let's hope we score six.
We'd have to put Jimmy McGuinness and McGeaney sitting down to try and get them. We try and encourage them to have a great game of football today.
Exactly.
Look, as you say, I think you'll see some of that early on. Jim McGuinness has changed their style in a little bit, that they're pressing really hard up front, so they're winning the ball back up there. So it'll be an interesting one. And you know, as I say, hopefully that the lads will be let off the leash and they get a good game of football.
Sound. And look, the big game, Division 1 final. I decided to look at this and see what Desi Farrell has done. And I'm not going to mention all of the big Dublin names. But, I mean, Larkin O'Dell, Temple Oak, Sing Street, I thought he was excellent the last day. Cian Murphy of Davis's has got a huge amount of game time. Ross McGarry from Bowden, the same. Sean McMahon, your son's club out in Raheny, the same. Sean Boogler, Niall Scully, both playing better than I ever saw. And then on the other side, on the Derry side and Mickey Hart's side, you have Conor Glass, you have Chrissy McCaig, Shane McGuigan, Conor McCluskey, and then add in the Kieran Kilkennys and the Brian Fentons and all of these lads. We're probably going to have 10 or 12 or 14 of the best footballers in Ireland on show here tomorrow for this Division 1 final.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we're kind of saying the same as we're saying for the Division 2 final. Will they be let go and will they have a go at this? I have a feeling. I definitely know that Dublin will have a go at it.
Yeah.
And the way Dublin have been playing after the first two league games, as you say, something happened because they certainly have there's a bounce in their step. You know, they're playing with great pace and great power. They're supporting each other, running forward at pace, and they'll do exactly the same thing today. And you're dead right, Sean. Desi has invested a lot of time in the younger players to the point that we went away last week and we were saying, Jesus, maybe they don't need what we would call the more mature or older players back because these fellas are playing out of their skin. But can you imagine when you do add the Costellos, the Manias, and the Caffreys, McCarthy, Cluxton, to that development? Now, that's the big thing in this league for Desi, is that he has developed these fellas. And I listened to Kieran Whelan during the week and he made a very valid point that, look, you can't expect a fella to come in, throw on the senior jersey and expect him to be outstanding.
Yeah.
But now it's happening. As you say, the Cian Murphys, the Sean McMahons, the Larkin O'Dells, Ross McGarry playing out of his skin, and the man, Sean Bugler, just unbelievable the last day. His work rate was just outstanding. So these fellas now have been added to the panel. The older lads are going to come back into it. I'm hoping he gives the younger lads that chance today to go and try and win a National League final, because I know Desi and Dublin want to win this, and the other team that have said and stated that they wanted to win the National League, and it's great to hear because it's Derry, a huge positive that Derry have said we want to win one. Hopefully Mickey Hart comes out today with a team that are allowed to have a go at it as well. So or tomorrow, sorry Sean.
Yeah, I'd agree with you now
that we have a great game,
and I know he's better players, but I remember the last time Mickey Hart managed a team and he decided to throw the kitchen sink at Dublin was a Leinster final when he was managing Louth, and that didn't turn out too well. But I think Mickey Hart has a really, really good side with him. I suppose, how do you see this one going, Brian? I'll have to go to an ad break now in about 40, 45 seconds. How do you see this one going? I mean, Derry will throw the kitchen sink at Dublin, there's no doubt about that, but they'll certainly be over the moon if they could beat them.
They really want to go for it, and they have a very good team. Was he pulling a stroke, as they say, the last day when he didn't put out the Conor Glasses of this world against Dublin? And was he waiting for this final? Probably, but I don't. It's just so hard to take Dublin in Croke Park, and the way they're playing, you'd have to go for Dublin, but it could be a very, very tight game. And when you look, as a former midfielder, we're sitting here and we're hoping to see Conor Glass and Rodgers against Fenton and Bugler. That should be a great contest in the middle of the field. But great players all over the field, and Mickey has developed the panel as well and brought in some new forwards. And you know what, Sean? Yeah. They're getting so many scores from their defence, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the point before you go to break, is when they played Mayo, they attacked like that, but if they lose possession of the ball, there's huge gaps at the back. And that's what happened in the Division 2 final last year. Dublin scored something like 4 goals.
They got 4-7, I think,
So they have to look at that. It happened against Mayo the last day as well. So I'm sure he'll be looking at that and not allowing that. Because if you lose the ball going forward against Dublin, you're in trouble. That ball goes up to Conn and Costello and these fellas. It's a score. So I'm sure Mickey has looked at that. We're looking forward to a great game, Sean.
Morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very, very good, Alan. I was looking at you on television last night. You dressed up like a tailor's dummy, they say. You'd look lovely.
Only my mum usually gives me them compliments, Sean, so I take it. Thanks a little.
Very well. Listen, I'm going to try and break it up into three. We know an awful lot more. I'm going to start international, domestic, and then try and go cross-channel. I have you're a great hit here with some of the fans. I have two or three messages on the way into this morning to say, make sure you ask Alan Colley about the Arsenal-Manchester City game. So we'll try and finish on that one. We've seen the international, we've seen the two games now with Belgium, We've seen the Switzerland game, and I never jump more to try and get a result for Ireland against Switzerland and hopefully get John O'Shea the job. But things have moved on now in the sense that we've seen the two games, the period where he's the interim manager. How has he done, and how do you think the FAI will approach this from here on in?
Yeah, I think, to be fair, it was difficult for John because he had to step in for those two games and try and just assemble a squad in quick fashion and obviously try and get two performances as well. I think we got one performance against Belgium and he'd probably be disappointed with the second one, but I think that was probably largely due to the fact that Switzerland were very good as well. We have to give them credit also, Sean. I thought the first half they totally outplayed us. Yeah. We changed things up a little bit in the second half and it was a bit more even. But overall, I think in terms of how John dealt with the situation, I thought he acquitted himself really, really well, both on and off the pitch, dealt with the media, exemplary, very likeable figure in Irish football. And I think whether he's going to be the manager or not, I think he'll still have a big role to play because I'd say he could be part of the coaching staff or the setup maybe if there is a new manager to come in. And from what I'm hearing, like I was kind of the opinion of the last few weeks that the longer this kind of managerial search had gone on and the uncertainty around it, I was willing to just suggest give John O'Shea the job and the team that he assembled and let him get on with it. But from what I'm hearing, there is someone lined up, what they've been telling us, and it will be announced in April. So we just have to wait and see who that person is. But I'm not exactly blown away by the candidates either, I must say.
Yeah,
Sean.
Yeah. And it's just taken so long. But look, at I just wanted to mention that because, you know, I know you were a very, very strong supporter of him, and I would be as well. I just think it's great to have an Irish guy running the Irish international team. It actually gets more people behind him. But can I move on to last night's match? Rovers and Bows first. We'll obviously have to talk about Damien Duff's Shelbourne in a sec. But 10,894. I wrote it down when I was watching it last night. A fantastic game of football, firstly. I thought Bows were probably slightly better the first half. But there was no doubt, Alan, the second half, Rovers just came out and absolutely tore them apart and probably could have won 4-0 before they gave away that silly goal at the end.
Yeah, they steamrolled them in the second half. But you're right, Sean, an unbelievable crowd, I suppose, the first thing to point out, 10,000. It's the first time that a League of Ireland attendance has hit double figures this century. So it's an unbelievable crowd and achievement. And it just goes to show the work that's been done with Shamrock Rovers over the years and the success that they've had. Obviously, they've had help along the way with the stadium and the council, but that's what we need and that's what all the clubs need. So good luck to them. And it was an unbelievable attendance and the stadium looked great, I have to say. The match itself, I agree with you, Bows were the better team in the first half. Certainly the first 30-35 minutes. I thought just towards the end of the first half, you could see Rovers growing into the game a little bit, and they started to cause a couple of problems down the right hand side, Dara Burns in particular, and they were having issues with him, Paddy Kirk and Dale Rooney. Whatever was said at half time, obviously Stephen Bradley probably got stuck into them a little bit, or he said in his interview afterwards he had a couple of messages for them, and they came out in the second half and absolutely blitzed Bohemians, and showed their champions quality, if you like. As you say, it could have been 4 or 5 by the end, Sean. And it just highlights, I suppose, where Shamrock Rovers are at the moment in terms of going for their fifth title in a row, a brilliant assembled squad, manager that's there a long time, compared to the Bohemians, who a manager is just in the door, trying to find out about his players, about his team, about his squad, and literally starting from day one. So I think that was probably the contrast between the two halves as well, that you have one team who are obviously well-established and another who are only starting out on their journey, if you like.
Yeah, but you'd have to say from a Bows point of view now that I'd still be very happy if I was a Bows supporter of the appointment of Alan Reynolds. He seems to have a good CV and a good pedigree.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think it's a really good appointment. And he only came in this week, so he's obviously only had 2 or 3 days to work with the players. I thought the first half you could see the shape and the structure that he put on the team in terms of how they were set up and both in possession and out of possession. But as you say, the quality took over with Shamrock Rovers and there was a few individual errors. But these are the things he's going to find out that he has to address, that he has to find solutions for, Al Reynolds. But I agree, I think it's a very good appointment. And going forward, I think it will prove that as well. Like everything, Sean, it just needs time. And I think he'll get the time as well. There's a relationship with Pat Fenlon. And I think between the two of them as well, I think Bowles, as I said last night, even on the coverage, there's massive, massive potential with Bohemians. And it's just about who that individual is that's able to grasp it and get the best out of him. And I think Alan Reynolds hopefully is in a good position to do that.
Absolutely. And speaking of another Dublin club, but we'll have to put around the provinces maybe the next day. But if you told Damien Duff before the season started that, listen, Damien, after seven games, you'll be 19 points and you'll be 7 points clear of Shamrock Rovers and the second place, he'd be scratching his head. He wouldn't believe you.
Yeah, I think he would have all said we're all mad, Sean, to be honest. But
he probably would.
Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly what's happened, and that's how it's transpired. And six wins on the bounce as well. It's unbelievable form that they've shown.
Yeah.
When you think the first day out, they drew 1-1 down in Waterford, and since then, it's been six wins on the bounce and another home victory last night. I listened to the interviews with both managers, and Damien felt they were quite comfortable. Stephen O'Donnell felt they were always in the game, and they could have maybe had chances. But to find himself 7 points clear, 10 points clear if you like a Shamrock Rovers. So it's an unbelievable start. The question is now, can they maintain it? I think they can.
Yeah.
I think he's getting the best out of the likes of Liam Burt and Jarvis and these lads, and they're the match winners. But I think defensively they're sound as well, and that's always your starting point. We've seen that with Bohemians last night. Their biggest issue is in defence, where Shelburne are excellent defensively. So that'll bode well for the season going forward as well if they are to maintain the challenge, Sean. But it's been an unbelievable start.
It has indeed. And I suppose that Rovers home, or their back matches, Drogheda at home, so they'll probably win that and will be on Shelburne's tail. But you know, if they could anyway keep the form shells that they have, like if they could even stay 4 or 5 points clear with, you know, the best part of 19 or 20 games gone, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at the end rather than how well you did at the start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, look, Damien Duff is far more experienced in these positions maybe than us as well, Sean. So he knows it's only a start. Yeah, he's obviously only going to take it game by game. They're literally, like, I was only even looking last night, Shamrock Rovers had only played 5 games before. So it's literally right at the start, Sean. And now with the international break over, we can get right into the teeth of the season, and they'll go and play maybe 15, 20 games now. And we'll have a better idea after maybe 10, 12 games just to see the landscape of the table. I still wouldn't rule Derry out, but they've had a disappointing couple of weeks.
They were bad last night, Alan.
Yeah, and there's a huge game now Monday night. Derry have to go to Talca Park against Shelburne, and if Shelburne were to beat them, that's 3 defeats on the spin. Shelburne will open up that massive gap on them as well, and then questions are going to be asked of Rory Higgins and Derry City. So there's a huge game Monday night in Talca Park.
Yeah, Derry, look, you know, I the last League of Ireland game I was at was Derry and Rovers, and a great game. But you know, Derry were right up beside Rovers at the time, but they've fallen back, and they just seem to make these mistakes on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, 2 defeats to a Galway and the one before that, the Bohemians, who obviously were having their own issues and trouble, having just sacked Declan Devine as well. So they're two really bad defeats, if you like, against teams that they'd be expected to be beaten if you're going to mount the title challenge or try and overcome Shamrock Rovers. So I'd say they'll be bitterly disappointed at the moment, but they've no time to dwell on it because, as I say, they have to recover today. And that's a massive game Monday night in Talca Park. As I said, if Shells were to win that, and open up another gap on Derry, and Derry then are feeling the pinch of having 3 defeats on the spin. Like, that's huge. That's a huge swing.
Absolutely. Now, I have to promise a few people that I definitely wouldn't let you off the air without talking to you about Manchester City and Arsenal. Pep Guardiola, Arteta. This time last year, Arsenal kind of stumbled and kind of, I won't say fell apart, but fell behind. They really need a performance tomorrow at 4 o'clock or 4:30 and let them know that they're contenders and they're going to go right till the end this year.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the game, Sean. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I've said here the past few weeks, it's the best title race that I can remember anyway in terms of the quality with the three teams, Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool. It's absolutely incredible. And I think they will maintain it. They will have learned from last year. I think the signings of Rice obviously coming in the off-season as well. Defensively, they're sound, Arsenal. They've had a brilliant defensive record. And it's Arteta against Guardiola, and he certainly want to put one over on him because he's the one that he's learned from over the years. So I think it's going to be a brilliant, brilliant match. And I don't think you'll see Arsenal fall away like we did last year. I think they have a great opportunity. I actually tipped them at the start of the year to win the league, Sean.
Yeah.
And I'm not changing my mind now. I still think they're in with an unbelievable chance. Of course, Man City are a brilliant team. Liverpool are a brilliant team. But I think Arsenal have as good a chance as any of the other two.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.